gets overlooked, in part because it's only five chapters long. Sometimes it's associated with the prophets because of its author. Sometimes it's associated with poetry because of its content. Maybe people have overlooked this historically because Lamentations just doesn't sound like a book that we want to spend much time in. And I've got to just get this out of the way as we start this morning. My preaching from Lamentations this morning has nothing to do with tax day being tomorrow. I just want to make that clear. But this is a book that speaks very strongly to the character and nature of God. And while it has a context that we'll explore together a bit this morning, I think this is a book that calls us back in a very beautiful and vivid way to the faithfulness of God, even in the midst of our struggles. Romans 12, 15, we're exhorted to weep with those who weep and to rejoice with those who rejoice. And in an assembly of this size, truthfully, if we were to lay out our struggles and worries, our griefs, the things that burden us even now, we could fill the front of this auditorium, maybe this whole room, with those kinds of burdens. I hope this morning you'll take that out. Whatever that is, that you'll think about that, that you'll lay it here in the floor and look at that as we consider how God, through the prophet Jeremiah, helped those people then to deal with their grief. Perhaps this morning it will help us to deal with ours. This is a book filled with tears. That's no surprise, given the fact that Jeremiah the prophet in Jeremiah 9, verse 1, said on one occasion, "I wish that my head were waters and my eyes a fountain of tears, that I might weep day and night for the slain of the daughter of my people." And as you read through these five chapters, there are those places where there are tears that are shed. Right off the bat, you have Jerusalem, pictured as a widow, sitting there on the curb, a place where she used to find comfort because of all of those who would associate with her, who would make treaties with her, who would bring their sacrifices or make pilgrimages to this wonderful city. And now this city lay in ruin. And as she lay in ruin, she weeps bitterly. And for the rest of the book, you see Jeremiah, who had made a career out of weeping, not because he was necessarily despondent, but because he had been preaching the good news of God to a group of people who had opportunity to turn away from their sin and as a result of that be saved from sudden destruction in Jerusalem, and yet she refused. And so again and again, you get the tension in Lamentations between real grief when the prophet says in 1 verse 16, "My eyes run down with water." When he says in Lamentations 2 verse 11, "Literally, my eyes fail because of all of my tears." Constantly, these tears flow with streams of water. Lamentations 3, verses 48 and 49. But in strong contrast to all the lamentation of lamentations, there's the beauty of God's protection and of God's righteousness. I love the way that even in the midst of lament, and this doesn't surprise us because we see it in Psalms, we see it in other great passages of the Word of God, we know that even as we grieve, God is faithful. The prophet is able to say in the midst of all of these acknowledgments of Jerusalem's suffering and the way that this people has been carried into exile as a result of failing to live out what it was God desired for them, that God is still righteous. Jeremiah says that in Lamentations 1, verse 18. And as you look through the trajectory of the words that are spoken in this book, it doesn't cease to end the way that even in the midst of tears, from the first chapter to the last three verses, where we're going to spend a great deal of time together this morning in Lamentations 5, verses 19 through 22, God is faithful. He continues to rule. He is just in what it is that he's offered. Now, there's some really strong language in this book that talks about the way that this holy city, the city of David, the city of promise that had served as the place where the temple had been constructed, was now gone. But God was justified in that because in all the promises that he had made, those conditions were not met. God had lived up to his end of the covenant, but his people had failed to consider their need to respond to God's gracious covenant with faith. And because they failed to live faithfully, we see the consequence of that action. Way back in 2 Chronicles chapter 35, verse 25, we learn something about Jeremiah the prophet. Not only do we see the way that throughout that wonderful prophetic book with his name on it, the book of Jeremiah, we see him weeping there. We learn that the reason Jeremiah spends so much time lamenting, as we've already noticed, was because even in the midst of great reform and restoration, a great restoration movement of the Old Testament like King Josiah led when he did away with paganism and tried to restore temple worship, in part because they had rediscovered the law of God and they wanted to respond to that. We learned that on that occasion, 2 Chronicles 35 and verse 25, that Jeremiah lamented over what was happening in the days of Josiah, that those lamentations were written down and repeated by those in Israel to this day, and that what we read in Lamentations is a real reflection of what it was occurring in their world in that time and place. What exactly was occurring? Well, in the very next chapter, in 2 Chronicles 36, starting in verse 15, we read about those horrific events that occurred when King Nebuchadnezzar came through, and when the people of Jerusalem were either destroyed or carted off into captivity. The way that the temple was destroyed, the way that fires burned. It's difficult, frankly, to read Lamentations, even though it's a beautiful book. Its structure is poetic. I didn't note the fact that if you look through these five chapters, four of the five chapters have 22 verses, 22 Hebrew letters in the Hebrew alphabet, 22 verses, because chapter 1, chapter 3, chapter 4, those are all alphabetic acrostics that go literally from the first letter of the Hebrew alphabet through the last letter. Chapter 2 has 66 verses because it does that with each of those letters on three different occasions. It's a poetic book, but it's a hard book to read. It's a hard book to read because the prophet talks about the way that the elderly suffered. He talks about the way that the children suffered, the way that the women suffered and the priests suffered, people being mowed down, people being abused, people being killed as a consequence of God's judgment being rendered upon Jerusalem because of her sin. And there you see her, weeping, mourning, agonizing, because what was sin in response to God's gracious covenant was eventually punished righteously by the God who had made the promise of punishment long before. And in the midst of all of that, much of Lamentations is spent describing what happens when we suffer. Now, to be fair, it's not like Job. In Job, for 42 chapters, we read about the reality of a man who's suffering and he doesn't know why. He's not perfect, but there's no really mathematical equivalency for why it is Job is experiencing the things he's experiencing in Job. There's no reason. He doesn't ever really find out the reason for his suffering. He just says, I'm going to trust you, God. Well, in Lamentations, we know the reason. And frankly, sometimes we suffer because we violate the covenant of God. Sometimes we bring suffering upon ourselves. That's not the only reason we suffer. And so while I recognize that the context of Lamentations is about the reason for suffering being tied to their sin, surely we can all relate. We can all relate to what it's like to be overwhelmed and burdened by grief to the point that we are paralyzed and no longer able to function, no longer able to put one foot before the other because we feel like our relationships are failing. Maybe it's a diagnosis. Maybe it is a relationship conflict, financial distress, conflict that we can't seem to resolve. Whatever that is, we surely can relate to the way Jerusalem is personified in chapter 1, sitting there alone, lonely in a city that used to be full of people, recalling about the way things used to be because the reality of my life right now is far from what it is I want it to be, far from the way it used to be. And I'll just be honest here. I think that part of the reason why we sometimes neglect Lamentations in our personal study is because in the midst of our wealth and prosperity, in the midst of our wealth and power, why would I want to go back in time and look at somebody else's loss and defeat? And the truth is, not only can I relate to suffering in my own life, but sometimes I need to awake to the reality that there are things that I'm allowing to take up residency in my life that need to be disposed of. There are perhaps associations that need to end. There are addictions that need to be broken. There are irreconcilable differences that need to be reconciled, because by the grace of our God, we have an opportunity by the peace of Christ, which surpasses all understanding, to go in love and to seek out the reconciliation that God from the very beginning has sought with us. If we read Lamentations and pay attention to all the wonderful things that are written in this book, and fail to learn anything about the character of God, we've missed the point. It's disappointing that sometimes because the language of the book like this is difficult, or perhaps it's so strong that it gets neglected, when there are so many wonderful things that are said about the faithfulness and nature of God. And so before we zoom in on those last three verses, note with me quickly three things that we see that are certainly true about God in any book of Scripture, but especially in this book. We see that God is the judge, but that he judges with purpose. When Jerusalem is lamenting in Lamentations chapter 1, she's not simply distressed because of her condition. She, in her distress, acknowledges that God's justified. The language of Lamentations often is difficult to read because of the suffering that's involved here. But when we walk through this book together, God is the one who led her to grief. That's what Lamentations 1 verse 5 says. There Jerusalem personified says, the Lord has caused her grief. Verse 12, the Lord inflicted on the day of his fierce anger this suffering. Verse 14, the Lord has given me into the hands of my enemies. It's for these reasons that Jeremiah and Jerusalem weep. We go to chapter 2 and verse 20 and we see a similar message there made clear. Really, it's verses 20 through 22. The way that all of the atrocious things that were happening, if you've got a Bible and you read that section of Lamentations 2, 20 through 22, we get there a clear picture of how awful and desperate times were. Women eating their offspring, little ones who were born healthy, killed and trampled, priest and prophet slain in the sanctuary of the Lord, young and old, male and female, fallen by the sword. Why has that happened? And even though in a world marked with suffering, it's easy to ask the question why and sometimes not get an answer that we're satisfied with, Lamentations says, God told us this would happen. God warned us in the Pentateuch, especially in Deuteronomy, that the conditions of faithfulness would allow us to stay in the land of prosperity and peace. That yes, there's peace, perfect peace, but that is a peace that is defined by a right standing with God, and God is faithful and consistent in his behavior. He hasn't gone anywhere. He's a father worth coming home to, and here he stands. When we put our problems out, God still stands there. He doesn't run away from conflict. He doesn't try to avoid dealing with whatever it is that we've laid before him. So why is it that we lack the faith to go to God and say, I can't solve this problem. I can't tackle this by myself. We bottle it up. We hide it. We try to handle that as if we're strong enough to handle that. And Lamentations says, even when we suffer and we deserve it, God's faithful. What about when we suffer and we don't know why? We suffer because we live in a world that's upside down, that's marked by the chaos of sin, because of the things that can so easily distract us and entangle us. God certainly is still faithful then. Yet he judges not only down the road on that scene of judgment described in Matthew 25, when the sheep and the goats are separated, even now our God judges righteously in our lives. Sometimes there are consequences for our actions. Sometimes there are consequences because of the actions other people have made or taken. But let us not confuse those consequences with the faithfulness of the character of God. God judges with purpose. Notice also that God keeps his promises. This isn't something that we only see, of course, in the book of Lamentations, but as tied to the righteous judgment of God, we have the faithfulness of God. You ever made a promise you really didn't want to have to keep? God even keeps those promises. God warned Jerusalem, you have gone after the nations. You've made ungodly alliances. You've forgotten the covenant of love and of grace that I've established with you. And as a result of that, you are going to suffer consequences. And in hindsight, as Jerusalem and Jeremiah look back on what it is that's taken place, they're able to say in passages like Lamentations chapter 2 and verse 17, the Lord has done what he purposed. He's accomplished his word. What he commanded from the days of old, he has thrown down without sparing. Yes, he's caused the enemy to rejoice. He's exalted the might of your adversaries, but you've reaped what you sowed. What ultimately has happened here in the life of Jerusalem is the result of her negligence, her failing to see God's goodness, that God was faithful the whole time. In the next chapter, I know that there's a passage in Lamentations 3 that we often look at, but notice what's said in Lamentations 3, verses 37 and 38. Who is there? We know who's there. Who is there who speaks and it comes to pass unless the Lord has commanded it? It is not from the mouth of the Most High. Is it not from the mouth of the Most High that both good and ill go forth? Sometimes I don't have an answer for why things are taking place in my life. And it may be that I don't have an answer until glory, until that day when all questions will be answered. But I long for that day. But in the meantime, I live as God is faithful to me. I live by the power of His Spirit, by the reality of grace, with a desire to honor Him, not because I've somehow mastered what that looks like, but instead because I know He's there. I know He's willing to forgive. God judges with purpose. God keeps His promises. And notice finally that God helps His people. God helps His people. Before we look at that familiar passage in Lamentations 3, 22 and 23, near the end of that same chapter, we're told that the Lord will not reject forever, for if He causes grief, He will have compassion according to His abundant loving kindness. How many of us have been blessed by that song, that hymn, "The Steadfast Love of the Lord"? The steadfast love of the Lord never ceases. His mercies never come to an end. Great is your faithfulness. You know, it's one thing to sing those familiar words that many of us have been singing for years. But have we thought about what's happening in the lives of the people who are singing those words? What has resulted in the lives of those faithful Jews who can speak those words? Have you ever said, "Great is your faithfulness," when your hometown stands in rubble? Have you ever said, "Great is your faithfulness," when loved ones have been slain in the aftermath of the destruction of your city? Have you ever said something like, "The steadfast love of the Lord never ceases," when you wonder where your next meal is going to come from? When there are conflicts and trials and things all around us that cause us with every reason to abandon faith, to grieve our existence, to wonder why we're here, what's our purpose, where are we going? That's the reason. This is such a beautiful song, such a beautiful poetic expression of trust. It's equivalent to Job saying, "Though he slay me, yet will I trust him. Your steadfast love never ceases." Even when death occurs, even when destruction happens, even when at times I reap what I sow, I know, God, that you're faithful. I know that you're present. I know that you're good. I also know time's short. And so notice with me what happens at the end of this book. As Lamentations comes to an end, we get this awkward moment. That's really what it is. It's a mixture in Lamentations 5, verses 19 through 22, because you've got, on the one hand, expressions of great hope, but on the other hand, unanswered questions. And isn't that how life is? And I wonder this morning, as we look at burdens and struggles and trials, if this doesn't sometimes describe that already not yet reality in which we find ourselves. That on the one hand, you've got a hopeful ending when in verse 19 of Lamentations 5, we read that wonderful expression of praise that was on a previous slide. "You, O Lord, rule forever. Your throne is from generation to generation." What a wonderful expression, expectation of hope. And you see something similar in verse 21. There's a whole sermon, right, in verse 21 when he says, basically, "Restore and renew. Restore as to you, O Lord, that we may be restored. Renew our days as of old." We want to go back to that time before the fall, before the struggle, before the consequence of sin. We want to live in your presence again. That's hope. But mixed into that is a lot of uncertainty. Verse 20, "Why do you forget us forever? Why do you forsake us so long? God, I don't know how much longer I can take this. What else am I supposed to endure? This is hard. Don't you know that we've been asking for help for a long time?" And then the ultimate cliffhanger, the very last verse in the book, verse 22, when in frustration, this Jeremiah, the righteous prophet, the one who's been pouring out literal tears because of what's occurred here, unless, he says, "you've utterly rejected us and are exceedingly angry with us. God, what have we done to deserve this consequence in our life?" Does Jeremiah believe in the faithfulness of God? I believe he does. not only from what he lives and what he writes in the book of Jeremiah, but what we've seen woven throughout these five poetic chapters of Lamentations. Were it not for the faithfulness of God, Jeremiah would have quit a long time ago, and maybe we would have too. And yet even faithful Jeremiah has questions. Why is this happening in my life? Why is this person treating me like this? Why can't that situation just work? How much longer am I going to have to wait? What else is going to happen in order for me to finally be able to see beyond that struggle? Notice that there's a pattern. And I don't know where you are in this cycle, because sometimes this can apply differently to different situations. But just imagine, we haven't literally done this, but just imagine that you took out all the things that are burdening you today and you just laid them out for us to all see, namely for God to see. And I just wonder, as I look at my burdens and I look at this beautiful pattern that we see in Lamentations, if I have yet to confess my own inability to solve it. That's hard for some of us, isn't it? God, I can't fix it. But I'm going to acknowledge that you can fix it. You, O God, are righteous, and you reign forever from generation to generation. I've prayed and I've tried and I've worked and I've toiled and I've shared, but I can't solve this problem. God, help me. I acknowledge your greatness. In Lamentations 2:19, that language of pouring out your heart is actually used when the prophet says, pour out your heart before God. Leave nothing hidden. Allow yourself to be vulnerable. Maybe make others even a bit uncomfortable with the level of transparency with which we're willing to talk about things that our world wants to sweep under the rug. We want that social media life where people only see the good, and therefore we somehow think that God is impressed by a profile. And what God really wants is our heart. He wants everything we have. And so in acknowledging our weakness and his sovereignty, his power, we pour out our hearts, we ask God for help. But then the last step, the step that Jeremiah finds himself in these five chapters, is the hardest. And maybe that's where we are today. Maybe that's where the struggle is today. How long, O Lord? How long do I have to wait? What else is going to happen? You know, when it rains, it pours. I've lost this and I've lost that. And I wonder, God, what else is coming down the pike? And the problem is, we can't walk by sight. We must walk by faith. 2 Corinthians 5:7, which requires walking with trust, believing that God is doing what's best for us even now. And the reason Lamentations resonates with us is because in some ways, here we sit in grief, in loss, in worry, in doubt, in anxiety, in conflict, in distress, at some level. And there God is, still as faithful as he was on the day Jeremiah wrote these words. What does he want? God, I can't, but you can. I need your help. I trust that you know what's best. And even if it doesn't happen until the day of glorification, may you be praised in my life. You didn't call me to live a life that only responds with faithfulness when things are ideal. You've called me to live a life where character trumps circumstances, where even in the midst of my grief, I see your compassion, and I know that you're faithful. It's amazing how a forgotten five-chapter book in the Old Testament that people struggle to properly identify, or people perhaps fail to fully understand, can speak so clearly God's word thousands of years later to people who are diverse, who are experiencing trials of various kinds. But regardless of the trial, regardless of the context, God be praised for his faithfulness. May he dry our tears. May he see our transparency. May he this day hear our cries for help. In many ways, the problems that Jeremiah and the other exiles from Jerusalem were experiencing far surpass anything I've ever had to experience. And yet in my own life, thanks be to God for his presence. Maybe the whole world seems to have forgotten you and your trials. Maybe I failed you. But God will not fail. God's faithful. And he's here this day willing to serve, willing to be present, willing to help? Are we willing to let him see who we truly are and what our burdens truly are all about? God's bigger than our burdens. Isn't it wonderful to know that through the years, many people have laid those burdens down in this very place, turning from sin, confessing that Jesus is Christ, coming in contact with his blood, and through that baptism, being set free, clean, empowered with the Spirit, ready to serve and to live faithfully in the fellowship that God's designed, that God adds us to. And isn't it wonderful to know, Christians, for those of us who've experienced that, that God is still the faithful God today that he was that day. May we never forget his faithfulness. Maybe today's the day, publicly or privately, we cry out to him for help. He's here and ready to help if we're ready to respond as we stand and sing together.